Thank you all for joining us tonight to talk about exports and trade. I'm Jim Zook, the Executive Director of the Corn Marketing Program of Michigan. Tonight, we'll be talking about or with our representatives from the U.S. Grains Council and the U.S. Meat Export Federation about hot topics in trade and how those have the potential to affect your markets as corn growers. Now, as we move through the town hall, you can press *3 at any time to ask a question. Again, that is *3 to have your question added to the query. After we hear from our speakers, we will open up the floor for questions from the audience. Again, that is *3 to ask a question. I want to begin by thanking all of you for your support of the Corn Marketing Program of Michigan. The program was recently renewed with an overwhelming support from corn farmers across the state. Thanks to your support, we're able to bring you programs like this telephone town hall and to invest in organizations like the U.S. Grains Council and the U.S. Meat Export Federation that use your checkoff dollars to open up new markets for U.S. corn and the products that corn gets turned into. Before I introduce our first speaker, I want to ask you all a quick question. Do you think that trade policies have an impact on your farming operation? If so, press 1 for yes. If no, press 2. Again, the question is, do you think that trade policies have an impact on your farming operation? Press 1 for yes and 2 for no. Now, we're going to introduce our first speaker. As he's presenting, please press *3 at any time, and one of our operators will add your question to the query. Our first presenter is Tom Slate. Tom is the CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Tom?
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you. And I was trying to answer your question here because just right off the top of my head here, I think that what happens every day around the world impacts farm prices on a daily basis. So there's my answer. Thanks very much, Jim. I'm Tom Slate with the U.S. Grains Council. The U.S. Grains Council is the organization that is supported in part by the Michigan Corn Checkout Program. And we're charged with responsibilities of expanding export markets for U.S. corn, sorghum, barley, and their co-products, particularly DDGs, and more recently, ethanol. And I'm going to start my remarks today by talking about three different areas, and then I'm very curious in your questions. What's on most people's minds right now is NAFTA, and I just want to say a couple words about NAFTA. NAFTA just completed its 7th round of negotiations here earlier this week on Monday. The progress has been slow. I'll just give you the quick version of it. The progress has been slow but steady, and we're making progress on some key issues for agriculture. The most particular one being biotechnology and sanitary and phytosanitary agreements that really, you know, govern the trade, the rules of trade in terms of facilitating trade between our three countries. And it's really important on the biotechnology part because, again, the rules that are being discussed in the NAFTA biotechnology were picked right up out of the negotiations for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Just a quick reminder, Mexico is the U.S.'s third largest agricultural trade partner. The total trade has been up 430% since NAFTA began. U.S. agricultural exports have been up 5 times since NAFTA began. And Mexico imports about one-fourth or one-quarter of all U.S. feed grain exports. And the thing I like to highlight a lot are 14,000 trucks and 1,800 rail cars cross daily into Mexico at Laredo alone. And so Mexico right now is a top market for U.S. corn, barley, DDGs, wheat, soybean meal, soybean oil, high fructose corn syrup, dairy products, poultry meat and products, eggs, pork. You hear about that more later, animal fats, and rice. And I'm sure several of you produce one or more of those crops with the exception of possibly rice. But again, that's a reminder of how important Mexico is a market. And Canada is also an extremely important market to you. They're the ninth largest importer of corn. They're a big importer of DDGs. And actually, they're our second largest importer of ethanol right now on the global stage. So that's a very critical market for you, and one that, again, we need a positive outcome from NAFTA in order to make things continue the progress we've seen. Mexico has started to buy grain from other countries, particularly Brazil. One of the things that really we've been watching very closely is that recently there was a trade where actually Mexico paid a few dollars more per ton than the U.S. price, which is something we didn't think we'd see. I'm going to move on very quickly to Korea. Korea is our third largest market for corn, and they're a fast-growing market for U.S. DDGs. They're probably right now about the fourth largest market, global market for U.S. DDGs, come on very strongly in recent months. The reason why I want to mention Korea is that I know a lot of you have been hearing about the steel and aluminum tariffs that have been probably going to be announced tomorrow. Korea, I met earlier about 5 days ago with the Korean Minister of Trade, and he said directly to me that his National Assembly is instructing him to look at retaliating against U.S. Grain imports if South Korea is not exempt from these steel and aluminum tariffs. So, again, a very direct thing you've been reading about a lot in the newspaper here over the last couple of days. This is something that's very concerning to us and should be concerning to you because, again, that's your third largest market for corn and, again, a great market for DDGs and a growing market for ethanol. The last I'll stop with would be China, and we have a lot of problems in our trade with China. We are in the midst of dealing with an anti-dumping countervailing duty investigation. That means Chinese are accusing the U.S. of dumping, actually it's sorghum, into the market at under market prices, and they're actually accusing the U.S. of subsidizing those exports to China. Now, this doesn't affect you directly, as you may not be a sorghum producer, but it certainly impacts the overall market for feed grains in terms of having all – sorghum was the number one market – or China was the number one market for U.S. sorghum, and to have that grain back up into the international marketplace is going to do nothing but depress prices overall, as China had stopped importing U.S. sorghum. The reason why I want to mention it to you is it's a number of – a lot of issues we're having with China, and China is making a lot of unprecedented moves in terms of how they are prosecuting this investigation for anti-dumping and countervailing duties for U.S. sorghum in China, and it is highly political, and we think that they're sort of writing the new rules of the game in terms of how these sorts of investigations are carried out, something that we're very concerned about, and something you need to watch very closely. The main message I want to leave with you folks right now is that I've said this before. I think that we're looking at Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. That is certainly the climate we're in right now with trade. And unfortunately, agricultural products are usually at the front of the line when it comes to actions or reactions from our importing countries. There is good news out there. I can talk about that later, but let me stop right there right now because I want to make sure we go on to the meat side of things.
Thanks, Tom. And again, I just want to remind everybody, this is just strictly an informational call tonight to educate you on what's going on around the world. We'll have time for questions at the end, but remember that you can press star 3 at any time, and one of our operators will add your question to the queue. Before we introduce our next speaker, I want to take a minute for another brief survey question. How important are free trade agreements like NAFTA to you? Press 1 if it's very important, 2 if it's somewhat important, or 3 if it's not important. Again, the question is, how important are free trade agreements like NAFTA to you? 1, for very important, press 2 for somewhat important, and press 3 for not important. Now I'd like to introduce our next speaker. As a reminder, you can ask a question at any time by pressing star 3 on your phone. Again, that's star 3. Our next speaker is Dan Hallstrom, President and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Dan?
Thank you, Jim, and thank you to our friends at Michigan Corn for the invitation to speak to all of you tonight, and thank you to all of you as backers of the checkoff. Your checkoff dollars investment with USMEF is greatly appreciated. I agree with a lot of what Tom just summarized for all of you. We're in an extreme period of uncertainty. A little bit more before I get into that, though, about USMEF. We're a trade organization very similar to the Grains Council. We are tasked with promoting the export of the meat side, beef, pork, and lamb. We have 19 offices, regions around the world. In the main areas of business, about 80 employees outside the U.S., and we have about 25 based in Denver. So that's sort of how we're set up. We're coming off a record year in 2017. To give you some quick background, just a refresher, on the pork side, we had a record year in volume with 2.5 million metric tons globally exported last year at a value of about $6.5 billion. And to put it in context, about 27% of all the pork produced is exported. So more than one out of every four hogs is exported. On the beef side, we also had a record year there on value at $7.3 billion in exports. And number two year, second highest year on the volume side at 1.3 million metric tons. So to Jim's second question about trade policy and trade agreements, from my perspective, as similar to Tom's, it's extremely important. These markets are all intertwined globally. So what happens in grains, what happens in meat, it all has an effect on each other. So for that reason, this is a very, very important topic. I'm going to start with NAFTA, similar to what Tom did. Give you an idea on the meat side, beef and pork. Since 1995, we've seen over $60 billion in sales on beef and pork. We started at 750 million, roughly less than a billion, back in 1994, and we're at $4 billion in revenue, over $4 billion last year, so a cumulative of $60 billion over that time. So it's been a fantastic market for us. And just to give you an idea, just how impactful it is. In 2017, the beef volume was 354,000 metric tons to Canada and Mexico. This represents 28% of our exports. On the pork side, it's even more dramatic. We had a little over a million metric tons, 1,010,000 metric tons to be exact. That represents about 41% of our exports, of our total global exports go to Mexico and Canada. And to break it down even a little further into a cut example, on if you look at Mexico and Canada on the pork side, we probably export over half of our hams, the hind quarter on the pork side globally, and I'd say 90% of that's NAFTA countries. On the beef side, the beef hind quarter, rounds, inside rounds, we probably export 35% of our rounds globally, and probably 80 or 90% of that is into Canada and Mexico. So if you break it down into a cut basis, if something were to happen where duties are reinstated in some way, shape, or form, you're going to see that part of the cutout, the hind quarter, drop overnight. So it's very, very important to us as an industry to maintain NAFTA to the extent that we can. Moving on, to Chorus, to the Korean FTA. Things are working very well in Korea. We're coming off of a very good year, a record year on beef and cattle. Third largest market on beef, and Korea represents about the fifth largest market on the pork side. Very, very important. Things are working well. Our duty structure with the Chorus agreement, it has us ahead of all of our major competitors since we implemented ours earlier Our duty rates inbound are lower than all of our major competitors on both beef and pork going into Korea. So that's an example of a trade agreement in our part of the whole globe works very well. The last thing I wanted to talk about is that Japan, as it relates to beef and pork, it is our largest value market by far. It's just under $4 billion in sales on beef and pork, $2 billion on beef, and about $1.6 or $7 billion on pork. So on a value basis, very, very important to the cutout. And, you know, we're and this is in the face of duty disadvantage on the beef side. Australia is our major competitor going into Japan. They're going in with an EPA that's been implementing rules for 3 years. And we're going in at about a 20% higher duty into Japan than Australia. Had we had TPP approved and implemented, we would have been par. In other words, we're at 38.5%. The Australians currently are 27%. If we had TPP today, we would be at 27% as well. So we set a record in Japan, a post-BSE record in Japan last year, and that was in the face of a 10% disadvantage on the duty. So long term, on the beef side, it's crucial that we look at getting some sort of either a re-entry into TPP or our own bilateral agreement going forward. On the pork side, TPP or some replacement of TPP is important as well, because we had a big duty advantage on processed pork, sausages and hot dogs and things like this, that would have come about in 5 years to a zero duty on processed meats going into Japan. This would have been big for the pork side as well. So I think in conclusion, from my perspective, things are going very, very well. We're setting records. There's a lot of potential going forward, not only in these markets, but other markets. But as Tom alluded to earlier, the uncertainty out there, be it the steel duties that are imposed or the NAFTA renegotiation, this all has a lot of potential impact on our business going forward. But suffice it to say that we're going to keep pushing, because if you look at just strictly on a supply and demand basis, things are aligned well for significant future growth on beef, pork, and lamb. I didn't mention lamb. Our largest market on lamb is Mexico, so yet another reason for the NAFTA agreement being important. So with that, I'll wrap it up and look forward to the questions.
Thanks, Dan. So at this time, we're going to open the floor up for questions from callers. Remember that you can press *3 at any time to ask a question. But while we're taking the questions, we want to ask you one final survey question. So we want to know if you found this telephone town hall valuable. Press 1 if you found the town hall valuable, and press 2 if it was not valuable. So that's 1 if you found it valuable, and 2 if you didn't. Our first question is going to be from Sharon. Sharon, do you want to give your question to the panel?
Yes, I had a question about the NAFTA versus the tariffs that President Trump is talking about. I think NAFTA probably needs some change, but how is that going to affect the tariff that President Trump is talking about?
Okay. Thanks, Sharon. Tom, do you have any comments about that? Tom, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry. I had my phone muted.
Oh, that's all right.
I hate it when that happens. Anyway, great question, Sharon. I think it's something really you have to pay attention to. I think where you are right now is that Canada and Mexico are both playing it very, very cautiously when it comes to the steel and aluminum tariffs. Both countries have asked for Canada and Mexico to be exempt from those tariffs. I think the president today sort of indicated that that Canada and Mexico could be exempt from those tariffs if we get a good NAFTA agreement, so a bit of a negotiating tactic, if you will. I think that the what you have to make sure is that as things roll along with this, if we certainly exempt or do not exempt Canada and Mexico from tariffs on steel and aluminum, see, we're doing that before national security reasons, and the Mexicans have already put this back into our face in saying that, well, food is a national security interest for Mexico, and that, you know, by do, you know, if you do that, we would certainly look at putting tariffs on corn, because obviously, you know, corn is a, you know, that's their starch staple in Mexico, hugely important to them. Most of the corn raised in Mexico is for human consumption. The U.S. corn is mainly for feed consumption. But they've made no bones about it that if, you know, we were to put in tariffs like that on Mexico, and Canadians have said more or less the same thing, they would retaliate against U.S. commodities. Again, this gets back to that, you know, Newton's third law of motion. And remember, you know, Canada is your second largest importer of ethanol. And I would think it would not take too much for that to be put on the list, too. So, again, we're in this very dangerous game of quid pro quo, and something that we have to be very, very careful of. Right now, the rhetoric seems to be calming down just a little bit. Had us really, really nervous here earlier this week. I mentioned the Korea case. Mexico and Canada were saying the same things about tariffs being pushed on steel and aluminum, and the big prospect for retaliation.
Great. So we're going to take another question from a caller, but I want to remind you that if you have a question for one of our speakers, you can press *3 at any time, and one of our operators will put your question in the queue. So our next question is from Phil Davis from Tipton. Phil, did you want to ask your question?
Sure. What specific aspects of NAFTA and the Pacific Rim Trade Agreements can be renegotiated to assist Michigan agribusiness?
Thanks, Phil. Dan, do you have any comments about that?
Well, I think a lot of that would be speculation. You look at NAFTA, and I think most of the aspects of NAFTA that are being focused upon really have very little to do with agriculture. I think it has more to do with the automobile industry, for example. And I think our main concern with NAFTA is that we get caught in the crossfire, so to speak, through the renegotiation standpoint. Of course, then you have the other outside influences that have already been talked about, the steel and aluminum threats and things like that. So I'm not so sure, you know, anything in the agricultural side, so to speak, speaking from the beef and pork standpoint anyway, I'm not sure there's really nothing to be renegotiated there because it's zero duty. It works well for us, but I think the concern is more that as an innocent bystander, agriculture gets pulled in when we really don't need to be. As far as TPP goes, that's an entirely different situation. Tom may have some insights as well here because he's probably closer to the policy side than we are. But on the TPP side of things, it's been made pretty clear that the U.S. would be welcome to come back into TPP quite possibly. But we would be naive, I think, to assume it the same way that we left it because there's been a few changes within the TPP document since we've left. But the fact that the door is still open and it hasn't been closed, let's say, to the prospect of re-entering TPP, I think that's a positive. So whether it happens that way or if we have to do our own agreement on the side, I think either way, it has to be focused upon because, you know, you look two or three years down the road on beef and pork, and we're going to be at a severe disadvantage going forward.
Tom, did you want to add anything specific from the grain side?
Well, sure. I think that Dan did a great answer. What I want to say for grain, what I said earlier, biggest thing for us in both NAFTA and in TPP, if we were to enter it, that would help Michigan agriculture from the grain side, would be standardized and agreed upon rules for dealing with biotechnology issues. Actually, the language that was negotiated in TPP, like I said earlier, was picked up and put into the NAFTA agreement. That chapter of NAFTA is just about closed. Again, we face these battles all over the world, and that's one area where we could see some clear advantages for Michigan agriculture. That and tightening up the rules of trade. You know, there's a lot of things that go into a trade of grain going from the United States to Mexico or Canada or somewhere in Asia, and tightening up those rules in terms of inspections of grain, in terms of contracting, in terms of contract facilitation, in terms of electronic documentation. This is sort of the stuff you don't hear a lot about in these negotiations, but it's the things that make trade easier, and making business easier helps, you know, expand business. So biotechnology is a big thing. Tightening up the rules on inspection and phytosanitary agreements, you know, agreements like weed seeds, things like that, and facilitating trade. Those are three big things that would help immediately.
Thanks, Tom and Dan. I want to remind the callers that are still on the call that you can press *3 at any time to ask a question. So that's *3, and one of our operators will put your question into the queue. Our next question is from Rod from Sturgis. Rod, what's your question?
I was wondering what kind of a market there is for grain sorghum and in and around the Michigan area. And I was also wondering approximately what percent of that crop is exported, and if you know, have some sort of an idea as far as the price difference that has been made with the China sorghum deal.
Thanks, so Rod.
Dan, you want to take that one?
No,
you can have that one, Tom.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, thanks. Great question. For sorghum, the case for sorghum is pretty complicated right now because China was the number one export market for sorghum. Obviously, sorghum is used a lot in livestock operations and feedlots and so forth. Sorghum is used a lot in ethanol in certain states here in the United States. Export-wise, China has China has taken practically all of the exportable supplies of sorghum out of the marketplace. China, I think it was something like 60% of U.S. sorghum was exported, and practically all of that was going to China up until China started this investigation on anti-dumping and subsidies. And so the thing that we're looking at right now is, you know, China was at its height importing about 6 million tons of sorghum. They dropped down to about 3 million tons of sorghum, still with a lot of sorghum. But right now, you know, they're not importing much, and we do think that there's going to be a duty in place on sorghum pretty quickly. Now, one, to give you a quick, look into how that China market affected the sorghum here. What the day that the China announced their intention to start an investigation on anti-dumping and countervailing duties for U.S. sorghum in China, the price for sorghum plummeted 50 cents on opening, and it has struggled to make any progress in the upward direction since then. So it's a tremendous impact on price. The challenge for the U.S. Grains Council moving forward is that we had to do this. We faced the same problem with DDGs and China. And, again, through your checkoff support, the council has folks around the world, just like USMEF does. And what we have done then with DDGs and we are doing now, again, with sorghum, is challenging the folks that work for you 24/7, 365 around the world to go out there and find alternative markets for sorghum on the export side. And so that's going to be not easy. Actually, there's a team that's headed out to Spain and Portugal, which is actually a pretty good tantalizing importer that could import a lot more. Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Mexico, we hope is going to pick up some of that slack as long as NAFTA goes well. And so we'll see that. Plus, I think you're going to see probably some more interest in using sorghum and ethanol, and certainly increased interest in feeding sorghum in the U.S. So we've got our work cut out for us in sorghum right now in terms of reviving the marketplace, because basically you just lost your best customer in China.
Thanks, Tom. This question is for Jim Zook. We've had a couple of callers ask questions about what are the bright spots for the future of corn markets in Michigan.
So that is something that we are always addressing every day, trying to create those new markets. I think it's best that we understand that the markets that we have in the U.S. are geared around the livestock consumption. So that is one of the reasons why we're having this call, because of the export markets for our livestock. The second is, with the livestock as well, we do consume that here in the U.S., but you know, to see increases in our protein consumption, we will need to see wages change and increase for that discretionary spending from our consumers. The other domestic use is around ethanol, and that's why we spend much of our time around the ethanol issues that we have, and that is to try and save that market and keep that market viable here in the U.S. So the reason we're having this call is because that is the bright spot for corn, is with the exports and, of course, the products that corn gets turned into, whether it be an ethanol, distiller's grain, that actual kernel of corn, or the meat that we turn that into through our livestock producers. So, we need to make sure that we always stay attuned to the markets, and that the everything that we do with trade is extremely important to the bottom line. And that's really why we decided to have this call, is to provide that educational opportunity for our growers.
Thanks, Jim. I want to remind everyone that if you have a question for any of our speakers, you can press *3 at any time, and one of our call screeners will put your question in the queue. Another question, and this one could maybe be for Tom or Dan, is we're hearing a lot of talk about trade deficit and the U.S. running a trade deficit. Could you talk a little bit about what that means and whether or not it's something we should be concerned about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is Tom. I'll take a whack at it. Yeah, we hear a lot about that. I think if you look at if you look at a graph of, say, of all the countries where we have trade deficit with, you can see that a lot of those countries are both top export markets for U.S. agriculture, as well as, you know, we're buying a lot from them. And so I think this is the thing that the president's so concerned about, is these huge, trade deficits. So, yeah, I mean, you know, to be positive, I think that we'd like to see, it's certainly good to have some attention on that, particularly in China. They could buy a lot more corn from us. They stopped buying corn from the United States. They're buying it. China's the largest feed grain importer in the world. They're buying a lot of their corn from our competitors, Ukraine, Brazil, Argentina, transshipped in through places like Myanmar, Burma. They could start to, you know, put a little pressure on to say, hey, start importing more U.S. corn. They're importing a lot of U.S. ethanol. Maybe they can import more. There's a lot going on there. I think one of the things we have to look at is not just the trade deficit as a raw number, but the per capita trade deficit. And again, if you look at that number, the U.S. actually is one of the better performers in the world. So we have to – trade is going to be the future for agriculture. 95% of the world's population lives outside of the borders of the United States. If you're producing a product for human consumption, you need to be focused on that export market. And you need to be talking about these trade agreements and how they provide access for your market. You need to talk about trade deficits, trade surplus. Agriculture always has been a positive contributor to the trade surplus in the United States, that the U.S. has. Agriculture has a trade surplus. And so I think you need to – main message for all of this is you folks need to pay attention to what goes on to these various trade agreements that may seem like an awful far long ways away, but they certainly affect you on a daily basis, like we said earlier.
That's a great point, Tom. Dan, do you
want to
add on to that?
Yeah, I just had one or two quick comments to kind of echo what Tom said. But yeah, agriculture, generally speaking, and especially in our part, the grain and meat part, has consistently run a significant trade surplus. As I said earlier, the issues with NAFTA, for example, are not centered around ag. They're centered around other industries, manufacturing, automobiles, et cetera. But, you know, another thing I might give you on the meat side is on the beef side. We have a huge business going export, $7.3 billion in sales last year globally. But we are importing beef as well. And I'll give you an example. We bring a significant amount of beef in from Australia. And 97% of that beef that comes in is lean meat that's put in, and it's blended with our fat trimmings here. And it's actually meat that we need because we don't naturally have a lean enough carcass to make an 80% plus ground burger patty. So what we do is we add value to our fat trim by bringing in some of this lean meat from Australia and New Zealand. And it actually works to the benefit of our beef industry because we have this huge demand, as everyone knows, for hamburgers, for ground beef. So I would argue in this example where imports really aren't, I mean, they're not a bad thing in that example. I mean, it might be downplaying our surplus trade numbers in general, but there's a reason it's coming in. It's actually helping add value on the beef side.
Thanks, Dan. And thanks, Tom. Again, we want to, find out if if this teletown hall has been useful. If you have found this teletown hall to be valuable, please press 1 on your phone and then press 2 if you did not feel that this was valuable. Again, I'd like to thank each of you who participated tonight. Hopefully you did find this valuable. We do intend to keep you informed of what's going on around the world. And again, I want to thank our speakers for joining us. And we just hope that you all have a very safe evening and most of all, a very profitable new year.